I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Geshe Thubten Tsherab. He will be teaching a meditation retreat on bodhicitta called Awakening the Wise Heart on November 15th through November 17th at the IHM Retreat and Conference Center here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
So you are a teacher of meditation and specifically bodhicitta. What is bodhicitta?
Bodhicitta is a Sanskrit word. It means altruistic intentions of good heart, a wish to achieve one's highest potentials so one can be most beneficial to all other sentient beings.
And so that is an awakening of the heart, an awakening of compassion, and these are qualities that everybody believes in, but it's not so easy always to practice.
I think that is true. I think in all the major religions speak about love, compassion, including the Buddhism. And in Buddhist, the emphasis is very much on love, compassion. And it is not so easy, but it's not impossible. It's possible if we put effort, and if we put enough effort and consistent with our practice, it is something which can be cultivated. Like, there are many stories. One of the story is one of the monk who has been in prison for 20 years and tortured for 20 years, and after he was released after 20 years, he came to India. Somehow he was able to come to India and met His Holiness Dalai Lama. During the conversation, he spoke about there was one instant during these 20 years in prison where he almost felt like he was losing his compassion and love for the people who were torturing him. So you can imagine in those 20 years, there were only one or two instant when he had that. So therefore, it is possible. And we see that many parts of the world.
To get to the place where you have love and compassion for people who are torturing you, that is so foreign to at least American sensibilities, where people have almost a culture of thinking in terms of revenge. How do you get to that place emotionally? I mean, I know that if you're a monk as you are, you've been practicing since childhood, but what is the nature of those practices? And how long do you have to practice to get to that point?
I believe if someone is sincere with their practice, and if they can give half hour every day, and every day sincerely half hour, and I think over 10, 15 years, I believe that they should be able to come to a certain high point of that.
And what is the nature of the practice?
The nature of the practice is contemplating that just as I want happiness, equally that who is harming me is just like myself, a human being who want to be happy, and just like myself, and just as I don't want any pain, suffering, equally he or she doesn't want pain, suffering in their life. So having that basic understanding, equally we all are same as a human beings, as a sentient beings, and also coming with the contemplating that sometimes we even though we don't want to be violent, but sometimes due to circumstances, due to our own delusions or negative emotions, sometimes we become a violent, and sometimes due to ignorance we make mistakes and do some kind of stupid things which we normally will never think about doing it if you are not ignorant about the situations. In same way, we try to think that person is doing that way either because he or she is ignorant about a lot of things, or because he or she is under the influence of those strong negative emotions, So it's like someone who is mentally disturbed person. So if you see someone mentally disturbed, if he or she try to behave badly towards you, if you understand he or she is mentally disturbed person, probably you will not get so upset, and probably you might have feeling of some kind of compassion for him, wanting to help him to overcome his whatever his mental disturbance is. So same way that person, the way they are treating you that way is because they are mentally disturbed in some way, because they are under the influence of one of those negative emotions. It could be anger, resentment, ignorance, or some other negative emotions.
In the case, in the story that you just told, a monk had been in prison and was tortured for 20 years. His love and compassion that he was giving to the people who imprisoned him didn't seem to help them very much, did it?
It didn't the people, it didn't help them immediately, definitely, no doubt about that. But it didn't harm them worse. If he was under the influence of strong anger or resentment or hatred, he might do something more violent, which will harm them, and also which will harm the person, the monk himself. So due to his compassion, it didn't harm the other people, it didn't harm him, and it helped him to it helped him to be more calm, peace with himself and with the situations, and it helped him to have more hope for himself, hope for others. And I think that is one of the reasons what keep him moving, basically.
If you were in a situation like that, where you were imprisoned and people were doing very harmful and painful things to you, and you have this training where you're able to have nothing but love and compassion for the people who are hurting you, are you also meanwhile trying to escape and trying to find ways to get out of that situation?
No, that is never the motivations. That is never the motivations. But of course, when you have compassion, a lot of good things happens as a byproduct. But that wasn't your intentions to feel good about it. Your intention wasn't to be more calm, peace. Your intention is really to have concern and compassion for those people who are doing those so negative. So that, because from Buddhist point of view, they will be experiencing the consequences of that in one form or another form in the future for themselves. So therefore, with that understanding, you try to really have a true love, compassion, concern for them, because even though they are not experiencing the consequences immediately, but they will experience of consequences of that in one form or another form in the future.
When you say in the future, in order for this philosophy to make sense, there have to be other lives, because a lot of people do horrible things and they die peacefully at home surrounded by their family and dogs and flowers and nice gardens and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess you can take two ways. Sometimes those people who does those horrible things, they might seem to die peacefully, surrounded by families and a lot of people. But who knows what is going in their mind? Feeling of guilt, feeling of so many negative for what they have done in their life. And I think lots of people, at the end of their life, they begin to recollect everything they have done in their life, in most cases. And sometimes I don't think they are very happy about what they have done. So physically they might seem okay, but I think emotionally, mentally, they are going a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, which we might not notice sometimes. And of course, there's no doubt in Buddhism, we believe in many lifetimes. So therefore, definitely, even someone does not experience the consequences in this lifetime, they will experience the consequences in future life, one of the future lives.
We're talking to Geshe Thupten Sherab about Buddhism. Now, you practice Tibetan Buddhism?
Yes, yes, yes.
And in Tibetan Buddhism, or really in any Buddhism, if you have the kind of training that you have and that you're talking about, which is almost incomprehensible to so many of us, to have that level of love and equanimity and compassion, not only for friendly people, but for unfriendly people. In your own life, for example, when somebody close to you dies or when something sad happens, do you grieve? Do you cry?
Yes, definitely. I feel sad about that. I do cry, but I don't hang over that for a long period. I accept that is part of our life. For example, I just lost one of my very good friends recently after I came here. I heard that, and he's very young, and I know him. We grew up together for 30 years. I know him very well. I spent a few months very closely together before I came here. So when I heard that, it was kind of shock to me. And then when I was talking with my other friend who called me to give the news, I started crying. I just can't stop crying, not stop. But then that was for a few moments. And then I have to come to accept the reality that we all have to go one day from the world. It just happened he has to go a little bit earlier than we expected. And that is the reality we have to accept. And there are certain things which I can do. All I can do is to do some practice, some prayer, dedicate for his peace, his good life. And so that is what I did. And so I don't hang on that for long. So I move forward.
When you do a prayer of peace and good wishes for somebody whose life has ended, does that help them or does it mostly just help you?
I believe, our belief is that it will help them. I'm not doing prayer because it will help me, but I'm doing it with a belief that it will have a positive impact on their future lives. Especially because we have a strong karmic connections. So when you have strong karmic connection, it has more effective when you do something for them. And also if someone who is doing prayers, if they have more higher realizations, then again it has more effective result. So at least that is what we believe, I believe.
I thought that when somebody's life is over, what comes to them is the good that they have done in their lives. So I live a life and I do some good things and I do some bad things, and then when my life is over, that's what I've got.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the main what kind of life you are going to have in the next definitely depend much on that, how you live your life. Whether you live positively or negatively. But definitely there are other conditions which also play some roles, and such as prayers, dedication by others does play some roles in deciding that. So it is not the main, it might not be the main deciding factor, but there are, it is not just one conditions or one factor, there are many hundreds and factors, and this is one of the other factors that it can play a role.
When we read Buddhist philosophy as people who are occasional practitioners or not practitioners of Buddhist meditation, one thing that's very hard for people to understand is the idea that there is no self. I'm sitting here in the corner of the Santa Fe Baking Company, and I have a radio show, and I have a self, and I have an identity. So what does that mean, not to have a self?
I think there is a lot of misunderstanding about that. I think for people, just by looking at the word no self. When we talk about no self, we are talking about there are two types of self in Buddhist philosophy: conventional self and absolute or ultimate self. And when we say selfless, what we are talking is there is no absolute self. But there is conventional self, which experiences happiness, suffering, which goes to shopping, which is listening to radio, which is giving interview, drinking. There is that self. That is unconventional self, what we call. The ultimate self is that the absolute or the absolute or ultimate self. That is what we are saying, that such self does not exist. So that is, I think, when we think about self, when we have concept of self, especially when we have strong emotions, when I have strong emotions, and because that is strong emotion, there is strong sense of self. At that time, if we observe, how do you appear to you, yourself, as a self at that time, we notice that there is a sense of kind of concrete, solid, absolute self. And we believe, we grasp that way. But if we really analyze whether there is such a absolute, concrete, solid self, as you feel that, then you cannot find it. As you, when you begin to analyze within your each of your physical parts, with each of your emotional parts, and to pinpoint and find where is the self, then it becomes very difficult to pinpoint. So even though there is no self where you can really pinpoint, either within your physical, any part of your physical body or emotional part, but still when we have strong self, we feel that it is there. So that is, such self does not exist. But conventional self is on the basis of your physical body, emotional, mind, then we say this is self. Such self exists and functions.
And does it have a positive function?
Oh, absolutely. Why not? Yes. The conventional self has positive functioning. The sense of ultimate or absolute self have negative function.
Very interesting. We are talking to Geshe Thupten Sherab, and he is teaching a meditation retreat on bodhicitta. Now, you are from Nepal, and you live part-time here in New Mexico, part-time in India and Nepal, and you are teaching. You've been in this training all of your life. How did you come to be a monk? You started as a child.
Yes, I started as a child when I was 9. But in my case, it wasn't my decisions when I first went to the monastery. It was my parents' decisions. And so I just followed their decisions, went. And but when I was around 18, 19, I had a lot of doubt about my path as a monk. I wasn't very happy at that point, and I went through a lot of struggles emotionally, mentally, for 2 years. But after 2 years of that struggle, I was able to overcome that struggle, and then that is when I believe I became a monk from my side. That is when I decided that I want to continue this path, and when I made decisions to continue and to go to India for further study, and that's when I went to India for further studies. And since then, I've never looked back, and I never regretted my decisions that I made at around when I was around 20 to continue to this follow this same path.
I was trying to imagine being in your shoes at that time and being a young man. I mean, I would think that if you were oriented that way, the path of wisdom is a very attractive path. On the other hand, you're giving up family and children, and that must be... Did it feel like a sacrifice to you?
Honestly, I didn't feel like sacrificing children like that. But of course, in a monastery, there is a lot of disciplines, very strong disciplines. And so when you see same age of you who has seems to have much more freedom to do whatever they want to do and less discipline, so of course you feel like you are giving up or sacrificing all this, which you at least at that time I felt like that some of the goodness, happiness, enjoyments that I have to sacrifice. So that was what I felt at that point. But I do not feel that same way anymore.
How did you find your way to New Mexico?
Well, to begin with, I graduated from India. I went back to Nepal to my monastery and served there 1 year teaching the young monks. And my teachers sent me to Taos because there is a PMT, it is a Buddhist worldwide organizations, which spiritual head is my teacher. And so they have the international office was in Taos at that time. So they needed some help at the office. So he asked me to go and help there. So that is how I ended up in Taos. And I was there for 2.5 years, 2001 to 2003. And then I decided to go back because I wanted to do my own individual long retreat. And I went back and I was able to do some retreat, find time for a retreat for a year, but couldn't because I was requested by the monastery to take some responsibility in charge of the educations for the monks and nuns there. So I was headmaster for 4 years. And then I did some other service to the monastery. And so last time when I was in Taos, I had a connection with the group here in Santa Fe where they asked me to come and teach. So I used to come every Sunday to teach. So they have been requesting me to come back over the years again, and at the very beginning I couldn't accept because I have many other responsibilities there. But recently I got to make the decisions to come here back again and teach.
How do your students here in New Mexico differ from your students in Nepal and India? I mean, they're such different cultures.
Well, I think on a human level, we all are the same. I think I've been traveling all over the world, and I see same people as a human beings, and I see same or similar problems with similar emotional problems everywhere. But of course, because the student here and the student from other part of the world, they come from different background, different cultures, so definitely there is some differences. I think certain subjects or topic which in Nepal or India or Tibet, they might not caution about certain topics because they have grown up in that kind of culture. They accept it from the young age.
Like what?
Like the concept of karma, let's say. The concept of karma. Or the concept of reincarnations. Whereas here, it is totally new concept. And so people are not convinced with those topics or subjects. So there is a lot of questioning and a lot of investigation, analyzing about on those topics, subjects. So therefore, from that perspective, you find difference. And another thing I found difference is in the West, people are more academic, more intellectual. In Nepal, India, they are more less academic, less intellectual, but more trying to adapt the teachings more on personal level, on experiential level. They try to, more than trying to understand intellectually, they try to practice it. So that is one of the few differences I can point out.
Since the Buddha himself walked on the earth, and before, and probably into the future, we have a world in which there are wise people pursuing a path of wisdom. We have warlords and torturers. We have a lot of ordinary people. And it seems that those same cycles repeat over and over again. The world isn't particularly getting better. Maybe it's not getting worse. We are overpopulating it. We are threatening it with global climate change. Do you think there is a role for Buddhist practice in actually making the world a better place and solving some of our really big problems?
Oh, I do believe. I think if you compare many of the other countries where the population of Buddhists is not there or less, and where the country where there's more majority of Buddhist populations, let's say for Tibet, they didn't have any problem populations. I think there was even some people even kind of complain that Tibet was the population too small, because there were too many monks, nuns, and so it's naturally it reduced the populations without being forced by any rules, regulations of the government, or anything. Naturally, that as part of that has happened in terms of populations. If you see, because of the whole that, because they were living by that, the destruction done to the environment is very limited. It is only after 1959 that now the destruction has started to come on environment level. All the mountains are untouched. All the forest was untouched. So you can see how it affected in terms of environment, positive impact on the environment, positive impact on population. And people were much more happier.
But then you've got a place like Burma, which has a beautiful form of Buddhism and also a terrible military dictatorship and terrible environmental destruction.
Yeah, again, there are a lot of people who call themselves Buddhists, but who are not really Buddhists. If you are true Buddhist, you live by your precept, your principle, your value. So just someone calling because he or she believe in Buddha and regard highly, just calling themselves Buddhist doesn't really become a Buddhist. I think the true Buddhist is when you live by the principle and the value of the teachings of the Buddha.
Geshe Thupten Sherab is a Buddhist teacher, and he is doing an upcoming teaching called Awakening the Wise Heart, a teaching and meditation retreat on bodhicitta, and it is Friday through Sunday, November 15th through 17th, at the IHM Retreat and Conference Center here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's my pleasure. It's great.
For more information and to register, you can call 505-660-7056, and you can go to the website nlsf.org, and I will link to that on my podcast site as well.